Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, stick to my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Okay, everyone, time to wake the hell up. It's time for the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Joe, what do you know?
Sam, tell us, what's that URL again?
cubojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address?
joevec@bellsouth.net.
Okay, thank you, Sam. I want to welcome all my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's www.whiterosesociety.org. My pal Ben Birch hosting my archives there. Also, all my listeners at rantradio.com and radiopower.org, and a new sponsor, for lack of a better term, cadronpictures.com. That's cadronpictures.com. And the list of networks who carry the show keeps growing and growing. Okay, before I begin with the usual suspects, I want to pass something along. My wife sent me an email a couple of days ago. She's still relatively new to the internet as far as getting emails and stuff is concerned. And she occasionally gets an email from certain things, and she forwards it on to me and asks me about it. And it was an email about, and I'm sure some of you have gotten, if not this one, other similar ones. This one in particular was about a guy from claiming to be a police officer who said that people are putting syringes in gas pumps so that they're HIV infected, so you have to watch every time you pump the gas and all that stuff. Well, you know, the first thing I did was check out on www.snopes.com. That's S-N-O-P-E-S.com. And they are very good. And I'm just giving a free plug to them, because if you haven't heard of them already, they are one of the best debunkers of these little urban legends that you're going to have around. They do some very, very good work, and I just wanted to recommend them to people. When you do get an email like that, check out Snopes.com, and you can just do a search for like a keyword or phrase inside the thing. The syringe thing is one of many. There are a lot of ones that go around the internet. Most of them are pretty harmless, but some of them can get pretty nasty and pretty dangerous, too. There was one about supposedly Cindy Williams of Laverne and Shirley was apparently made a quote that she was against pay raises for the military. That's not true. There was a Cindy Williams who had to do with government, who pulled out a policy paper talking about, you know, not raising pay, but it had nothing to do with Cindy Williams, the actress. And she got in a lot of, I don't want to say hot water, but she has constantly had to write to people or to answer this information, because it's simply not true, and people send these emails out all the time. So www.snopes.com, S-N-O-P-E-S.
Now, last week I said that I was fed up with my job, and I wanted to clarify that a little bit, because it just, you know, it makes it seem like I'm just giving up on everything. And the fact of the matter is that I like my work. I really do like what I do. I enjoy, you know, just taking the parts off the line and stacking them. It's a good enough physical job to keep me active. It doesn't take that much mental energy for me, so I can sit there and think about stuff to talk about on the show or stuff like that. And when the things are running well, it can be a pretty decent job. Like, you know, last night, which is Tuesday, it was a pretty good night. It's my work that I can't stand. It's the bullshit that you have to put up with on a daily basis from every work. That's what really drives me up a wall. And Monday is a perfect example. And let me tell you what happened on Monday. I come in, and of course, it's the first day from after the weekend. So, you know, it's just usual. I have like a routine. It's the usual stuff. I have a routine that I follow during the week. And Monday and Tuesday are just basically days I try to get by, you know. Wednesday is hump day. It's also when we get our paychecks. I actually get paid Thursday because I have direct deposit. But we get our paychecks on Wednesday. And then, of course, there's Thursday and Friday, which are, you know, the downhill days. So, you know, I just do that, and time goes by pretty quickly. But anyway, we come in on Monday, and I noticed that I find out right away that the main line, and for those of you who haven't listened before, I work on a paint line. Basically, parts are hung from an overhanging conveyor belt. They go around the roof into a paint thing and come out, and I take them off the line later. We actually have two of these lines. I work in the back line where they do a lot of smaller parts and a lot of other parts. And the front line was down on Monday. It had been broken all day. So you would think that with the front line broken that we would have a lot of extra manpower. Now, obviously, it makes sense that they want to try to make up for the production that's going to be lost on that line. Which are really, you know, there's only so much you can do. I mean, there's only so many parts you can hang on a given night. So with that line being down, it was only obvious that they were not going to get as much production as they were getting before. But you would think at the very least that they would have a lot of extra manpower, that they could take a couple of people, because they have, I think, they have six people, three hanging and three taking off on the other side. And you figure they could have, you know, moved at least a couple of people over where they're hanging and a couple of people over where us were taking off. No, we hardly saw anybody along those lines. And what the boss did, and God, my boss doesn't have the brains God gave a spider. Good Lord, what a schmuck. What he did was, there were a lot of parts that were on the line when the line had broken. So he had some of the guys pull them off, which is fine. You still could have had, you know, two or three people taken off and had people come back and help out. You know, I don't know where those other people were. But what they did was, they wanted to see if they could get those parts to paint anyway. Now, because they were painted badly, what you want to do is you just want to run a couple of the parts to see if they go through okay. If you run the parts and they come through all right, then you know you can hang the rest of them. But otherwise, if they don't come out good, you know not to waste your time with it. Because if these parts are not painted properly, they get thrown in the dumpster, basically. They get recycled. They have a special dumpster for the metals there. I guess they have a deal with the metal company that does it. And we're talking about a lot of equipment here. We're talking about, God, about maybe 9 or 10 pallets worth of very large, very heavy boxes. And they were throwing them all on the line. Now, the bad thing about that is not only did you lose the boxes anyway, because you were going to lose them if they had turned out bad. You were going to lose them anyway. There was no turning back on that. But you also lost all that production time. I mean, there were other parts that you could have hung on the line when they were hanging all of these parts. If they had just run a couple, this, okay, well, they're not going to work, so let's just throw them out and we can, you know, make up production another way. But you know, my boss, these ideas don't cross his head. And you sometimes wonder how these people get their damn jobs. And it's really amazing to me how something that simple just goes above their heads. And it's like, am I the only one who's seeing this? And of course, the reason is it's not entirely his fault, because he was hired by the people who hired him, not for his intelligence or his organizational skills, but for his ability to intimidate other people. And that's really all they seem to care about. There is actually another supervisor who works in the press area who is very competent and very intelligent who works well with his people. And I'm surprised they really have somebody like that there. And my feeling is if you have somebody like that in one area, why not have them in the other area? It's all organization. You know, it's just organization. And it's not rocket science. I've been there for 6 months and I can run that place better than my boss can, at least as far as the paint line is concerned. I mean, why is it such a difficult proposition? And you've got a situation where, you know, all he does is sit there and just keep an eye on the people hanging and make sure they use every hook. And, you know, if you've got good people doing their jobs, you don't really need to keep your eye on them all the time. And I realize that you're always under pressure to get numbers out, but there's ways of doing that and there's ways of not doing that. And he'll, you know, he won't even bother with us unless, of course, we turn the bell on. Which, of course, we wind up having to do a lot yesterday. Or Monday. And yesterday I had a very small situation where I was putting parts in a particular basket and I was running. The basket was starting to get full, so I waved down our forklift driver and I said, you know, please, can you bring another basket here? And I guess something had happened with him during the day. He woke up on the wrong side of the bed or something. He's like, you haven't filled up that one yet. And it's like, yeah, but if I fill it up, I don't have, you know, I have to turn off the line waiting for another basket. You know, well, you do your job, I'll do my job. And the guy goes, he gets a couple of baskets, and he gets two of them, you know, one stacked on top of another, which is basically useless. If he had just brought one, I could have manually moved it over when I needed it. But he brought two of them, and he just kind of let them sit there, and he ran off to do something else. So naturally, when the basket got filled up, and it got filled up pretty quickly because they were coming with a lot of these parts, I didn't have a place to put them, so I have to hit the bell. Nobody likes hitting the bell. Hitting the bell stops the line. That is the only time you're going to see my supervisor come over to my end is when you've had a cut off the line. And we don't want to see our supervisor over there. We want to avoid him like the plague. But there's nothing I can do. If I don't have a place to put the parts, that's it. Now, this is what I talk about when I say, I love my work, but I hate my job. There is no reason for that. I mean, I asked the guy nicely to bring another basket. It wasn't as if I was, you know, issuing an order, although he does feel I'm a little bossy, and I admit I can be a little bossy. Because, you know, I'm a sergeant. I was a sergeant in the Air Force, and I still have that kind of mentality. I see something that needs to be done, and if I'm not doing it myself, you know, I know who's responsible for it, and I say, hey, we need this done, please. And I can be very blunt and very straightforward, but it's not like I say, hey, move your fucking truck over here and get a fucking basket. That's not what I said. I said, could I please have a basket over here? And then he's, you know, doing some other stuff more and more, and I'm like, you know, seriously, I need a basket over here. But that's the stuff I'm talking about. And I'm sure you can all identify with that. You know, or our constant struggles just trying to find a decent piece of cardboard. When we stack the stuff, we put a piece of cardboard in between and have these large pieces of cardboard. And there's actually two different sizes of them. And one we can't use for the baskets because it's just too wide for the baskets. And the other one is really made for the pallets, and that's fine. But sometimes we have to go and dig around and look for the right piece of cardboard if we're loading up a basket. And some of these parts require a lot of cardboard because they're very thin parts. And you just lay them flat and you put a piece of cardboard over it. You're only talking about maybe six or eight parts, and then you got to throw another piece of cardboard. So that you use up a lot of it. And we have to spend some time finding the cardboard. I don't know when was the last time we had new cardboard. But to me, that's all part of it. And I'm sure you can identify with that. So you work, like my friend Dave Mayo, you work in a print shop. And you need to bind some stuff together with staples or with some sort of binding equipment. And you don't have what you need for that. It's not readily available. And you have to go digging around looking for it. And then the boss gets angry at you because, you know, you're not doing your job. But you can't do your job because you need the equipment. Or you need something, and that there's not enough of it, so that you're fighting among your fellow workers for the equipment. Has that ever happened to you? I'm sure it has. It happens in every damn job. Anyway, let's take a little break. Sam, play us out.
The Papa Joe Radio Show will be right back.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, that URL is cupojoe.blogspot.com. And the email address to write me, and I always encourage people to write me, joevec@bellsouth.net. Before I go into the real subject of this next segment, I want to talk about a company who you should support. Even though they can be a bit bureaucratic and they're not perfect, they are doing the right thing. The company is Sears. Now, I bitch about Walmart all the time because Walmart treats its workers like crap, but Sears is doing the right thing. Now, like a lot of other companies, Sears has people who are reservists who are serving in Iraq currently. And a lot of companies are, you know, when you go into reservists and you go into the military, you go into active duty, they just pay you the rate for active duty, which in a lot of cases is not as much as what you were making as a civilian. And if you're a reservist, you have to leave your civilian job. And there are a lot of people, a lot of our soldiers out in Iraq are facing financial hardship because of this. Well, what Sears is doing is that those employees that are reservists and are called into Iraq, they are paying the difference. In other words, if you were, let's say for the sake of argument, that you were making $200 a week with Sears and that the military was only paying you $125 a week. And again, I'm just throwing out numbers, giving an example. Sears is paying an extra $75 so that your military pay plus what Sears is paying you equals what you were making when you left Sears to go to fight in Iraq. That is a wonderful thing to do, because it helps keep the families from worrying. I mean, could you imagine how bad it is being a soldier in Iraq and being shot at and having to worry about, you know, as well as being having to be shot at, having to worry about whether or not your family is going to make it, whether or not you're going to have a home to come back to because you lost your house because you couldn't afford to pay the mortgage. But Sears is doing not only the right thing, but the patriotic thing, and helping these soldiers out while they're on duty. Now, the what they're doing is lasting 5 years, and if they've been out for 5 years. But if they've been out in Iraq for 5 years, these reservists, that means something is really seriously wrong. It's bad enough that they've been forced to stay there as long as they have, but if they're there for 5 years, something is really seriously wrong, although I can say that something really is seriously wrong. So go out there and go shop at Sears. You know, Sears is fighting to stay in business because of competition from places like Walmart, which is basically just driving down the quality of life for everybody, whether you're a consumer, even though they have low prices, and certainly if you're an employee, and if you're a working person, period, because they're setting the standard, as I mentioned in the last episode. Tomorrow, I'm going, actually it's the first time I'm going to a union meeting. I'm now officially part of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. In fact, I need to make a disclaimer here that my views are not necessarily the views of the IBEW, nor of its associated union, the AFL-CIO. My views are my own views, and they do not reflect the opinions or the policies of the IBEW or the AFL-CIO. That is my disclaimer on that. At any rate, where I work, they're in negotiations for a contract, although I hesitate to use the term negotiations. Basically, the company's saying this is what we're offering, and we're not changing one bit. And unfortunately, the union, for whatever reasons, is going to back down on this, and we have to go and vote tomorrow on whether or not we're going to accept the contract or whether we're going to go on strike. And from the scuttlebutt that I heard, no one is really planning on going on strike. Everybody's planning on signing the contract, so that means I won't be walking the picket line. But I got into a fight with a guy today, and I lost my temper, and I actually started to get in the guy's face. And you've heard me when I start cursing and get angry, so you know what I'm talking about. And I really just basically got in the guy's face, and I said, yeah, because he was like making fun of me. Because I said if they vote for strike, I'll strike. You know, I mean, I support the union, and I just joined the union, and I support the union, and I support, you know, the whole idea behind it. And his attitude is like, well, you know, I'll have a job, or, you know, then you can just be, you know, go be homeless down on the street, you know. Or he said, oh, well, oh, this is what he really told me. He said, I guess you don't need this job then. which is ridiculous. Of course I need this job. I need this job desperately. If I was, you know, if I lose this job, I can be in serious trouble again. Not that I was, you know, not that I'm not in serious trouble now. I'm in serious trouble with the job. But, you know, I don't like being made fun of. You want to push my button like that? That's a way to push my button. You know, you can disagree with me, but don't ridicule me. I'm 42 fucking years old. I've been around the block. I'm not an idiot. And I realize that the situation is bad and that the union leadership doesn't have a very good reputation, at least for this particular local. I'm not going to go into too much detail on that. But, you know, there's a lot of people in Siemens where I work that are not members of the union, who are not members of the union because they feel like the leadership is neglecting them. Now, I haven't been in long enough to make any serious changes, and so far I haven't been able to attend any union meetings because they've been held generally on 9 o'clock on Saturday mornings, and I haven't been, you know, I work till midnight, and I'm not up at 9 a.m. I mean, I usually stay up till like 3 or 4 a.m. It's now actually a quarter to 3 a.m. on Thursday, technically, and I'm doing this at this point because I want to get the show out tonight. And get it on for so Rant Radio can have it, at least so Rant Radio can have it for tonight. And then I'll do the rest of it tomorrow, hopefully. But I'm going to the union meeting tomorrow. It'll be my first meeting. And I'm going to vote for the contract, but I'm going to say, let's use the next 3 years, because that's the length of the contract. Let's use the next 3 years to reorganize. And the first thing is that we need new leadership. And I am going to put myself in a position of being the one who steps up and says, we need to change, and vote for me, and I'll help make changes. And quite frankly, it's something I know I'm going to suck at because I've never done that before. I mean, I was a manager of a one-hour photo lab, but that hardly qualifies me for someone who, you know, to be a president of the union, and I'll probably get my ass kicked, but I'm going to go down swinging because this union apparently needs to change the leadership. The people who have been there a long time, and the last contract went very badly, and this contract went very badly, and people really aren't getting any of the support and protection from the union that they deserve. Certainly not if they're paying $15 a month for a union membership. They deserve to get support and protection from the union. And one of the things I want to do is to set up a strike fund, because 3 years from now, things are going to be different. And it's either going to be really, really bad different, where it doesn't make a difference if we have a union or not, or they're going to be really, really good different in the sense that working people are going to have more power to do things, in which case we'll have a much stronger bargaining position. And there are a lot of things at work that need to be changed. It's more than just about pay and benefits, because actually the pay and benefits are not too bad. I mean, even though $11 and change an hour, and we will get a slight raise if we get if we approve the contract, even though that's not a bad wage at all, it's still not a living wage, really. You should be making about $15 an hour. But I went off on a couple of people today. I was actually reading a book that I had gotten by Mark Satin, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right, S-A-T-I-N. I'm assuming it's pronounced Satin, called The Radical Middle, Politics That We Need. And I'm going to have Mr. Satin on as a guest, and hopefully for Sunday's show, because he emailed me and says, hey, I'd like to be a guest on your show. And I said, that's fine, because he's pushing his book, which is great. It's a very good book called The Radical Middle, and we'll talk about that later. But I'm reading this book during my lunch, and one of the guys from work, white guy, of course. I'm a white guy, by the way, but I tend to identify more with black people and with those oppressed, as the case may be, than other white people. But he came up to me, and he was interested in what I was reading. And I've talked to this guy before, and, you know, he started talking about politics, and he said, I'm no fan of President Bush, but I'm afraid Kerry's going to raise my tax. And you just want to pull your hair out when you hear something as outrageously stupid as that. You know, as if Bush gave this guy a tax cut. But anyway, he started saying, well, you know, I'm very close to being a libertarian, and I almost really went off on a nasty rant about being a libertarian. And the guy started talking this and that, and then, of course, he mentioned Hillary Clinton, and I knew that he was just another obsessed. You know, these people have such a pathological, irrational hatred of the Clintons. I mean, it's not about policy. It's not about what they're doing, because they really don't care what they're doing. You mention the word Clinton, and their fucking eyes bulge out, and their hair stands on end, and they start getting all shaky, and their teeth start to quiver. You know, they just, there's just something insane about it. I mean, I don't like Mr. Bush, but the reason I don't like him is because his policies are wrecking this fucking country. It has nothing to do with him personally. It has nothing to do with being jealous of his wealth. As far as I'm concerned, he can have all the damn money he wants. He can live a life of squalor and luxury and never have to do a damn thing the rest of his life because he was born into a wealthy family. That doesn't bother me. What bothers me is that he uses the money and power that he has to make our lives worse so that he can get more money that he doesn't need, him and his friends. And with these people, their hatred of Clinton, and that's what it is, hatred, is so irrational and so insane that it just defies description. And I kind of went off on him a bit, you know, and I'm like, and I didn't really even get into my whole libertarian. As far as I'm concerned, libertarianism is the biggest ripoff scam of a political movement. You know, there's a reason why the Greens get more votes than the libertarians when it comes to presidential elections. First of all, how can you have an organized political organization whose philosophy is you should have no organized political organization? Isn't that a contradiction in terms? Second of all, have you noticed that there's no black libertarians? I haven't seen a libertarian that's black. Do you know why? It's because libertarians are for either people who are already rich and white or people who aspire to be rich. White people who aspire to be rich. It is the political religion of choice for ignorant, greedy rednecks. And this guy, of course, claims to have, you know, he probably listens to that fucker Bortz all day. Somebody ought to shove a cork up this guy's mouth. Kick him around for a while. You know, sooner or later, these people are going to go too far. Because too far is the only place they can seriously go. And someone's going to whack their head off and stick it on a pike somewhere. I'm not recommending anybody do that. But I'm saying that sooner or later, when you piss off enough people, that's what happened. That's what happened in the French Revolution. You know, the French peasantry was perfectly happy to let the nobles do whatever the hell it was they were doing. But the nobles got too greedy and too stupid. And finally, the people got fed up and they started chopping heads off. And my old friend Bichon, he derides all those, you know, the French nationalists and stuff like that. And granted, the Reign of Terror was far worse than anything the monarchy in France ever did to its citizens. But you know what? The monarchy brought it on itself. Just like the greedy bastards today, who are going to get taken down eventually very hard, have brought it upon themselves. And if you're going to be fucking stupid, and I mean stupid in the sense of knowing that you're doing something that eventually is going to come back to haunt you, but doing it anyway, then you're going to deserve what you get. And this asshole is probably going to wind up voting for Bush so we can have four more wars. And, of course, you know, Kerry is just, you know, the massive the Texas-chusetts flip-flopping liberal who's going to raise everybody's taxes, and he's so evil. And that. Meanwhile, they're sitting there sucking George Bush off, just enjoying the fact that we can beat the crap out of Iraq, except for, of course, the fact that we're getting the crap beat out of us now, because they're often soldiers at a pretty decent rate. And you know why? Because they're targets. And you know why? Because the Bush administration doesn't give a shit about the soldiers. The targets. That's really all they are, is targets. And I feel bad for them, because these are just poor working slobs like you and me. And they signed up for the reserves out of either a sense of duty or because they wanted some training or because they wanted some things that the military could offer that other people... And again, I'm not downplaying the military. I always recommend the military as a good career for a lot of people. I don't recommend it now simply because the odds are you're going to wind up in a foxhole in Iraq or Iran or Afghanistan. And, you know, pretty soon it's going to be that you're not going to have a choice because they're talking about bringing back the draft. And, you know, I was in the Rant Radio chat room the other day while the show was on. And there was some young Member of the Winger Youth, and I'm really surprised because they have quite a few members of the Winger Youth that hang out with the Rant Radio people. And he was going on about, oh, you know, more people are killed in Los Angeles every day than are being killed in Iraq. And, you know, all this old stuff. So let's concentrate on the important stuff. And I said, excuse me, first of all, even assuming that 27 people per day were being killed in Los Angeles, which they are not, Los Angeles is a city of millions of people. 7, 8, 9, actually I think more like 12, 13, 14 million people live in the Los Angeles area. There are 130,000 U.S. troops in Iraq. So I'd say even if the number 27 on a daily basis was correct, that losing 10 or 12 soldiers a day out of 135,000 is much more large, is a much larger statistic and much more dangerous for the ones that are in Iraq. And certainly, I would say that if you gave the soldiers a choice about whether or not they want to patrol the streets of Baghdad or patrol the streets of South Central LA, guess which one they would pick. But, you know, when you're 18, 19 years old, you think you fucking know everything. I thought I knew everything when I was 18, 19 years old, and the older I get, the less I know. Especially when I'm talking to an 18 or 19-year-old. Excuse me, I needed a drink there. This show is going a little slowly, this one. But you know what? Everybody's entitled to a fucking dud every now and then. But you know, I could argue with him, and I can sit there and scream bloody murder. And you know what? Stupidity is its own reward. And you'll find out the hard way, sooner or later. You know, Smokehouse last week I was getting on his case, but he wasn't as bad as this kid was. Yeah, no big deal. Just a few soldiers. They knew what they were getting into. Never mind the fact that they're not doing what they're trained to be doing. Never mind the fact that we went to Iraq for a lie to begin with, for several lies. The biggest one being that Iraq represented a real threat, which, of course, they don't. Except now they are. Anyway, let's take a quickie. Sam, play me out. We'll be back. And we're back. Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice who have those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, that URL is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and my email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. I was looking at the Atlanta Urinal Constipation the other day, and they had an article about bullying, about a 13-year-old kid who was going to middle school here in Jonesboro, which is south of Atlanta. Jehovah's Witness, nice kid all around, but had been bullied for a couple of years. According to the article, he had been hit, called gay, and even had his shoes urinated on in the Clayton County School restroom. Kid's name was Daryl Gray. And he's been a victim of these bullies for a couple of years. And finally, he fought back. He took a pencil and he hit another boy in the face with it, seriously injuring him and leaving him permanently scarred. Now, I totally and completely sympathize with young Mr. Gray. In fact, I applaud him for fighting back. Because I was the victim of bullies, too. And really, that's the only thing these guys understand. In fact, my wife has two sons who are going to high school, and I have standing orders with them, or at least when they were staying with me. My standing orders to them were, if somebody pushes you, you push back. And you push back so hard and so fast that they will never even think about pushing you back again. But unfortunately, the state of Georgia doesn't see it that way. And Mr. Gray is being charged with felonious assault or with battery. And he faces up to 5 years in jail. Aggravated battery is what he's being sentenced with. That's outrageous. The fucking kid's just defending himself. And, you know, normally I would say, well, where are the authorities when this is going on? Because bullying has been a problem for a long time. And always it's the same thing. The kids don't want to speak to the authorities because they feel like it's squealing. Either that or the authorities simply don't do anything about it. You're expected to settle your own affairs. Well, the kid tries to settle his own affairs and he gets punished far worse than any of the kids who are picking on him have ever been. That's outrageous. 5 years in prison for a 13-year-old? What the hell is this country coming to? You know, we put more kids in prison than pretty much any country in the world that's civilized. I think only Iran does it more than we do. It's outrageous. 5 fucking years in prison for a 13-year-old for hitting back against bullies? Don't they take anything into account? You know, I was a victim of bullies when I was growing up. And I fought back more than a couple of times. You know, I didn't win every fight. I was not a good fighter. I didn't like to fight. And I got beat up a lot. But I'll say this. Nobody ever fought me, ever wanted to fight me twice. Because I don't want to fight so much. I did everything I could to avoid it. And when I was pushed into a situation where I had to fight, you know, I poked people's eyes, I kicked you in the nuts, I did whatever. You know, I think it's unbelievable that they're sentencing this kid to 5 years in prison for fighting back. Maybe it was a little extreme, but you know what? Fuck that. Let's take a look at the circumstances. I think it's sickening, and I think the whole country is sick. I think we like being bullied. I think we like the bullies. And according to the article, the bullying problem is getting worse in this country, and more kids are fighting back from it. I applaud the fighting back part of it. Because, you know, if the authorities aren't going to help you, then you might as well do what you can. You know, if you break up a guy's face like that and leave the kid permanently scarred, that's going to be a symbol for anybody else who thinks about bullying. And isn't what America is doing to these other smaller countries the same thing? We're basically picking on other countries because they've got something we want, or because they just want to make a point. We just want to make a point about how big and tough we are with our $400 billion military. By the way, we're spending $400 billion on the military. Why the fuck can't we get enough armor for the troops that are out there so that less of them can, say, lose limbs or get killed? Where the fuck is that $400 billion going? I'll tell you where it's going. It's going to toys for generals and admirals. That's where it's going. It's going to defense industries like Halliburton. That's where it's going. It's certainly not going to help the soldiers. And because it's being wasted there, it's not being able to go into the states so that they can have more people to look into problems like this. How in the name of hell are states supposed to do this? Are schools supposed to do this when they're crunched for budgets to begin with? And then when the kid fights back, you put him in prison. What kind of message are you sending to our young kids today? That someone who's bigger and tougher than you is going to get to push you around, and he will never get punished, but you'll get punished if you strike back. And that's exactly the type of situation that we face as workers. That the company can do anything they damn well want to us. Big corporations can do anything they feel like. But if we strike back, either through striking, through legal means, or through not legal means, then all of a sudden it comes, oh, those evil, horrible workers. And meanwhile, conditions are getting, for us, are getting worse and worse and worse. Now, young Mr. Gray was sentenced today. And thankfully, he did not get 5 years in prison, although the very fact that he was considered for that is remarkable. And I should correct myself that he wasn't 13 years old. I'm sorry about that. He was 12. But he was sentenced to probation, 90 days probation, paid $332 in restitution, and performed 16 hours of community service, which is actually a fairly decent sentence. However, I still applaud Mr. Gray, and I tell anybody I can, if a bully pushes you around, you push back. You push back. And they've asked that he do his community service at a church. I mentioned he was a Jehovah's Witness. You know, maybe if he wants to punish the bully, maybe he should send some of his friends over to the bully's house to keep pushing a Jehovah's Witness on him. You want to punish the kid, that's the way you punish the kid. Now, the judge, Leslie Gresham, found him guilty of aggravated battery. He could have been faced up to 5 years in jail, like I said, but Gresham refused to consider the designated felony charge because he was only 12 years old. And issuing her guilty verdict against Darryl, Judge Gresham raised the question of whether a bullying victim who for the first time fights back, and Mr. Gray had no trouble at all in school prior to this, can commit felony aggravated battery. And she said, unfortunately, with the law, it is yes. And thankfully, the judge in this case had some leeway in this, because with a lot of the laws and a lot of the crimes that I have going on, judges have that decision taken from them. So I just think it's outrageous that this sort of thing happens. And I'm glad the kid didn't wind up going to prison. But the idea that he could even be charged with such a crime at 12 years old is outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. Yet we put kids like this in prison. We put kids not much older than him in prison. And it's just all a symptom of what's going on in this country, where it's perfectly all right for someone to push you around, but if you push back, then you get punished for it. Those kids who have been bullying Mr. Gray for the last 2 years, have they ever been punished for it? When a kid steals your lunch money or pushes you down a flight of stairs or just beats the crap out of you in the park or in the playground or wherever after school, do they ever get punished for that? Why is it that they only punish the ones that fight back? And my feeling is, fight back anyway. If the authorities are going to be against you, why sit there and take the beating? You take your punishment from the authorities and you lambaste them for being a bunch of gutless cowards, for not dealing with the situation to begin with, because these are supposed to be the authority figures. But if you're just out there and supposed to take it all in on yourself, you know what? Take it all on yourself. Do what you need to do. Now, I don't really know the entire situation at the what happened at Columbine. But when the whole thing happened, I felt sympathy, but I almost felt sympathy for those kids who did all the shooting up, especially if they had been the victims of bullying by jocks, because down here in the South, especially, and out West, the jocks have the run of the schools, especially the high schools. They're the ones who are lauded. They're the ones who are praised above all else, you know, because, you know, sports are more important than academics down here. When was the last time you had a pep rally for the debate team? You tell me that. Yeah, when I went to school down in Florida, they used to drag our asses out of class to go to a pep rally to introduce the fucking football team. And I thought, what the hell is up with this shit? A bunch of rednecks being given license to beat the crap out of other kids because they can go out there and throw a fucking ball around or run with it better. I don't blame the kids for fighting back. And the kids with Columbine, they wouldn't have been able to get away with so much if it hadn't been so fucking easy for them to get weapons. But God forbid we make it difficult to get weapons, because that would anger all the gun dealers in the NRA. You know, let me tell you something about the fucking NRA. The problem with the NRA is not the gun users or the general membership of the NRA. There's some kooks in there, but there's some sensible people in there, too. The problem with the NRA is the fucking leadership. That's where the problem is. Because they're not interested in gun safety as much as they are interested in how much they can make by selling guns to anybody. If you want to show them the bunch of hypocrites that they are, why don't you recommend that they open up a nice gun store cheap in South Central LA and sell it to the black gang members? You'll see how fast they'll say they don't want to do that. Because you can make a good deal of money doing that there. But only certain types of people, if you know what I mean. are allowed to own guns. And because of all the loopholes and because it was so easy, the kids at Columbine managed to get their hands on these guns and just blow everybody away. If they had pencils instead of guns, all they would have done was been able to stab a couple of people before they were overpowered. And it's a good thing that young Mr. Gray didn't have access to a gun, or he might have done far worse. I don't think a bully ought to be killed, but I think the bullies ought to have the snot kicked out of him every now and then. Anyway, let me change the subject here for a second, because there's something been going on in the blogosphere that's kind of interesting that I want to talk about a little bit. There are a few blogs that I read regularly, and one is probably the biggest blog that's in the blogosphere, which is Atrios, a.k.a. Eschaton. Now, Atrios keeps his identity a secret. He's anonymous. And I don't generally have a problem with that, because he's worried about retribution or whatever. He's worried about his safety, and he's worried about future employment places reading, you know, about his political, because it does become a part of your political resume. I mean, I could tell you, part of your resume, what your politics are. Because I can tell you for a fact that if you're a left winger, your odds of getting hired are not quite so good, depending on where you're going. And especially if you work in, like, the construction field, or at least the non-union construction field, or like when I worked as an assembly guy, where you're talking about you have a lot of freelance contractors and stuff like that. And these people are extremely libertarian and hate the idea of workers working together. They love the idea of competition between workers, blah, 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 blah. And they make it worse for everybody in the long run, basically. And if you have politics different from theirs, you are definitely persona non grata. So at any rate, that's one reason that Mr. Atrios, whoever he is, keeps his identity a secret. The other big guy that keeps his identity a secret is Bart Kopp. And Bart Kopp is, I don't want to say a good friend of mine, but I've talked to him on the phone a couple of times, and I really admire and respect the work that he does. I have my critiques of him, but I'm not going to say anything about that, because I want to talk specifically about this issue. But he chooses also to remain anonymous. Now, generally, I don't have a problem with that. In principle. And the Reverend Alan Brill of therightchristians.org, which, by the way, is an excellent, excellent website, therightchristians.org, and Reverend Brill has brought together several people to blog on his site, which, by the way, makes it very easy. I wish I could get several people to blog on my site so I don't have to feel inclined to write something all the time because, you know, between doing the radio show and the work, I don't always have the time to write. At any rate, the Reverend Brill had a nice long column basically chastising. He didn't mention Atrios by name, but I think everybody knows who he's talking about. He's had a couple of things going on with him to begin with, because Atrios wrote a long thing about religious progressives and how they're not fighting back enough. And Reverend Burrow went off on him for that. And now Reverend Burrow is going off on him for remaining anonymous. And his point is that if you aspire to celebrity and seek to be an influential voice, then there reaches a point where you have to stop being anonymous. And in principle, I agree with this. Much as I agree that Atrios has the right to remain anonymous if he so desires, sooner or later you have to reach a point where you say, you know, I'm getting to be a very influential and a big celebrity now. Maybe it's time I should out myself. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword with him because, quite frankly, what if someone finds out who he is? They could use that to blackmail him. And the same with Bart Kopp, although there have been people who have... If you've never fought with Bart Kopp, the man has a temper. I don't know how much of a temper Atrios has, but Bart Kopp's got a temper on him. And I don't like to get in his way when he goes off on somebody. But both of these guys can, you know, are worried about their life. But you know what? Maybe that's something you just have to take into account. Look, I made a very conscious decision. I made a very conscious decision a while ago that I was not going to keep my identity a secret. My name is Joe Vecchio, and I live here in Decatur, Georgia. And anybody who wants hard enough to find me is going to be able to find me. I'm not going to lead you right up to my doorstep, but this is who I am. And if you want to find out where I live, I bet you you could probably do it if you dug in a little bit. But it's important for me for people to know who I am. Just so that I don't have to worry about somebody finding out and using that against me. But also because I just feel like it's important for people to know my name. That's why I announce it on the radio show. You know, even the big guys on the right, they don't bother to hide their names. They don't operate under pseudonyms. Of course, they are not threatened by people on the left with death threats like people on the left are threatened with that by people on the right. So maybe it's easier for them. But especially if you aspire to do a radio show like I do, then I think you need to be open and honest about who you are. And I really think that maybe it's time that Atrios and Bartkop just got it over with. They can continue to use the name Atrios and Bartkop if they so desire. But I think, personally, I think being anonymous hurts them in the long run. That there's only so much they can do that they can accomplish for the cause by remaining anonymous. And Reverend Brill, who is in South Carolina, takes an awful chance being in South Carolina because, you know, that's one of the hearts of Wingerdom out there. You know, he's smack in the middle of downtown Freeperville. And that can be very dangerous. Because, you know, they wouldn't have any compunction about burning a cross on his lawn, even though he is a Christian and a minister. Doesn't matter to them. He's not the right religion. And he's not the right politics. But on a bigger issue, I want to talk about the infighting that goes on because of this. Because the infighting is what hurts us in the long run. Now, I get the impression that what's going on between Reverend Rill and Atrios might be something a little personal. Because Atrios has become such a big name. And I have my own beef with Atrios because he's never blog-rolled me. And he barely mentions me or my site or my radio show. Even though we have spoken to each other. Because we meet in the Bartkop chat room. And you can find me there occasionally along with the chat room on Rant Radio. But he's never put me on his blog roll, and there are people on there who really, you know, don't do as much as I do. But that's, you know, but I'm not going to attack him for being anonymous. I mean, that's, you know, I think that's the sort of thing that should be handled privately. What's important is that we shouldn't divide ourselves over these issues. That's why they should be handled privately as much as possible. All this public infighting only adds fuel to the right-wingers who are attempting to divide and conquer us to begin with. And we're dealing with a significant apathy in this country over stuff like that. And most people, realistically, don't think of when they think of their life and stuff like that, they don't think in terms of right or left. They just think, okay, this is what's going on, and this is what I need to change. Practical things. And when they see people like us fighting amongst themselves, they think, well, you know, they're no better than anybody else. You know, they'll think one thing of the Republicans, but at least the Republicans are consistent in their stupidity. Although they occasionally fight among themselves, too. And certainly they're no fucking angels. Before I put this thing out to pasture, I want to talk about a very weird story. That comes from johngorenfeld.net. It's www.gorenfeld, gorenfeld.net/blog. It's John Gorenfeld's weblog. And he apparently does a lot of writing about Reverend Sun Myung Moon. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the Reverend Sun Myung Moon, he's a guy, I knew him when I was, not personally, but I first heard of him in the 70s. And his followers were known as Moonies, generally young teenagers who had been taken. It was known as basically a cult, but young teenagers who had been taken and recruited, and they were known as Moonies. They sat in corners selling roses to help raise money for the church. Now, the church that Reverend Moon runs is called the Unification Church. And it's called the Unification Church because Reverend Moon believes that he is the second coming and that all churches shall unify with him, become one, unify under him. That was the word I was looking for. And apparently over the weekend, over the Easter weekend, they had like a take down the cross ceremony, replace the cross for a crown, because the Reverend Moon is crowning himself king of all creation or whatever. He is, like I said, he claims to be the Messiah. Now, I got this thing here. You can go on, it was from I got it from Atrios, but it's gordonfeld.net/blog. Just scroll down a little bit of it. There's some screen captures from a video. And someplace called the Dirksen Senate Office. And this took place on March the 23rd. Where Reverend Moon, and this is in a federal government building, Reverend Moon was crowned the Messiah. Now, his movement had a video of it. And there's a link to it. I couldn't get the link to work properly. It was a link to the video. It says, first, there's a shot of Congress emphasizing that this is the peak of the of Reverend Moon's glory. And Reverend Moon is, by the way, the owner and publisher of the Washington Times newspaper, which doesn't have a big circulation, but it has a lot of influence, especially among conservatives. In fact, Ronald Reagan said that it was his favorite newspaper and is a particular darling of the right wing because of its extremely conservative viewpoints, but also because Reverend Moon has been extremely generous to the right wing and has been working with them. This is just remarkable footage. This rabbi blowing a traditional horn of some sort. It's called a shofar. And there's a crown. They got a picture of a crown on a velvet pillow. On a big sign, it says Ambassadors for Peace. The Dirksen Senate Building, March 20. I mean, they got a big sign that says it there. The captions are in Korean, but there's a couple of guys, and one of them is apparently a U.S. senator. Congressman. I'll say it right. Representative Danny Davis. Let me see what they got on him here. And it's just remarkable this thing. Yeah, Congressman Danny K. Davis, 7th District, Illinois. It certainly looks like him, and he's wearing some sort of traditional robe, and he's carrying a crown and robes. No, excuse me, there are two crowns. One's for Reverend Moon, and one's for his wife. This is fucking weird. This is in a U.S. government building, and there's Reverend Moon in robes. Go to this site and see this. I can't believe that this is happening. This is so friggin' weird, and as far as I know, it's not a hoax. I looked at Snopes.com, and I saw nothing mentioned about this at all. Apparently, there was a brief notice of it in the Washington Post website, but it was quickly removed. I don't know. I don't know if this is 100% true or not. It just seems too friggin' weird. This is part of the speech that the Reverend Moon supposedly gave. So the five great saints and many other leaders in the spirit world, including even communist leaders such as Marx and Lenin, who committed all manner of barbarity and murders on earth, and dictators such as Hitler and Stalin, have found strength in my teachings, mended their ways, and been reborn as new persons. Emperors, kings, and presidents who enjoyed opulence and power on earth, and even journalists who had worldwide fame, have now placed themselves at the forefront of the column of the true love revolution. Together they have sent to earth a resolution expressing their determination in the light of my teaching of the true family ideal. They have declared to all heaven and earth that Reverend Sun Myung Moon is none other than humanity's savior, Messiah, returning Lord, and true parent. This resolution has been announced on every corner of the globe. Does this freak you out as much as it freaks me out? I can't verify 100% on this. I'll have to do some more research on it and get back to you. But, you know, the Bush family does have a lot of ties to Reverend Moon. And I have a picture of George Bush cutting a piece of cake with Reverend Moon and his wife. George Bush and Gerald Ford apparently gave a speech to a bunch of Moon people at a 96. Weird stuff, but I see by the clock on the wall that it's time to end this. I hope to have the interview with Mr. Satin for Sunday's show. Until then, this is Joe Vecchio with the Cup of Joe Radio Show, signing off.